You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Miami started Monday up 3-0 over the Indiana Pacers. You weren't quite sure how the Pacers were going to respond, whether or not they'd have a sense of desperation or urgency, and whether or not Miami would be able to match that. Well, in fact, they did, because they were able to steal a Game 4 victory to clinch the series over the Indiana Pacers, a sweep in order to advance to the Eastern Conference semifinals, where they'll potentially meet the Milwaukee Bucks. I'll recap the game, talk a little bit about some of the key performances and what really stood out, and of course get into the good, the bad, and the ugly of the game. But of course, Miami, that's the big story. They've moved on. They've beat the Indiana Pacers. They've vanquished one of their, well, kind of sort of rivals. I apologize for the late show. I had to watch a really ugly Lakers Trailblazers game in order to potentially recap that for the Locked On NBA national show, which you should totally be subscribed to and you should listen to that. But here I am now. I wanted to put out a show to talk about it because it has been an exciting day for Heat Nation to be able to watch the Miami Heat beat the Indiana Pacers and again move on in a series sweep, their first sweep in a few years since the Charlotte Hornets, Bobcats at that point in time. I can't remember now. I think it was the McBob era. So it's been a long time. Either way, Miami, it was an interesting game. They started off building a quick lead, and then with a few minutes midway through the first quarter, Jimmy Butler exits the game, and we're not quite sure what's going on. Everybody starts playing internet sleuth. They can't see Butler on the sidelines there, and we don't get a report until almost halftime, I want to say, that an injury to his shoulder has kept him out of the game, and he was nursing that, and we weren't sure exactly what happened. We started to see footage of him then right before the half with an ice pack on, and that he would return to play. It was surprising to see that because Miami was actually able to distance themselves from the Pacers in the second quarter. They actually pushed an 8-point lead going into the half because they had outdistanced the Pacers in that second quarter. They got some key shooting from Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero off the bench, and others. And with Jimmy there, I thought maybe they wouldn't play him because, well, he's too important to what the Heat can do. They need him for the next round. But obviously, he wanted to fight through it in typical Jimmy fashion. He wanted to be out there for his team. He wanted to contribute, and he did. He did make some big plays, particularly defensively. After the game, he joked, well, sort of joked, that he couldn't even put his mask on, that he had to have to put it on one-handed because his left arm, where he sustained a shoulder injury, he couldn't even move that. So not particularly good. We'll see how he progresses. He'll get treatment. He'll get rest. He thinks he'll be fine. According to Eric Spoelstra, again, in that postgame presser, he said that Jimmy's shoulder was bothering him before the game and was aggravated. I'm not sure if I believe that. It doesn't really matter. Either way, Jimmy is injured, and hopefully he'll be able to get the rest and treatment he needs in order to be a fully functioning player for that next round matchup, presumably against the Milwaukee Bucks. But back to the game itself. With Butler out, we weren't quite sure who would respond. Tyler Hero was the first player off the bench for Miami, as has been pretty typical. He's provided his typical scoring off the bench and playmaking ability. And I theorized via Twitter that this was a perfect opportunity for Kendrick Nunn. With Miami's offense looking somewhat sluggish, again, through the first half, they only mustered 42 points. This is after they had mustered 70-something points in the previous game. Against an Indiana Pacers defense that was presumably tight and playing with some level of desperation. And so I had suggested that Kendrick Nunn should get some playing time off the bench so he could contribute offensively. That's in fact what he did. He played, went off the bench for his first action in the playoffs and was, quite honestly, really, really good. His first play, assisted on a three-pointer, then converted a three-pointer of his own, had a really nifty pass for another assist after that, and was generally pretty positive. Finished with a plus-minus plus 5, 7 points in 14 minutes. Wasn't a huge factor, maybe, but it was just enough of a, I think he played the kind of role that was nice for him to be effective in. He was most efficient, I think, one of his best games. He played some really good defense, too, which I was surprised at. And so when he's effective as a scorer, as a playmaker, making plays, which is, not the strength of his game, and is playing defense pretty well, as he did, he was able to limit Malcolm Brogdon, who torched us in Game 3, and he was able to stay in front of him, move his feet well, and defended him pretty well. That's the kind of game that we hope to see from Kendrick, because I think he's out of the starting rotation. That seems pretty likely, particularly because Goran Dragic is playing as well as he did. But Kendrick played some minutes, was very effective, and just, again, a positive impact. That's all he needs to do. He doesn't need to be a 15 to 20 point per game scorer, which is what he would prefer to be, what his strength certainly lies in. Rather than just scoring all the time or being a capable scorer, he needs to do all the other things as well so that he can justify his minutes out on the floor. So Kendrick played a solid 14 minutes. Andre Iguodala played a little bit to replace Jimmy. He played 26 minutes as well, finished with a plus 13, even though he only had 5 points. He also finished with 5 rebounds, however. 4 steals, really good defensively, just seemed to have active hands. Iguodala, I have to say, he's been so impressive to me. We kind of assumed that this was what he was going to be able to play. The question throughout the whole season was, what was his age going to be like? What was it going to be a factor for him? Would he slow down? And was he ever going to be the kind of player he was during Golden State's championship run? And while he may not be quite as good as that player was, the reality is he's in great shape. His basketball IQ, his understanding of the flow of the game is top-notch. Like, he just seems to know exactly what to do and when to do it. And that's such a huge factor for Miami, because you look at the strength of their team. You got Bam Adebayo. You've got, Kendrick Nunn or Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. These guys are so young. And to have a guy like Iguodala come in and play a balanced role where he understands what to do defensively, offensively, make the right pass, knock down a shot, those things are huge for Miami and, of course, for their championship hopes. So having a guy like him play as significantly and as well as he has been a huge factor for the Heat. And overall, Miami was just able to play a really solid game. I think it was the best, let's say 3 quarters, it was Indiana's best, most consistent effort. They were playing Miami pretty tightly. Their defense was pretty good. And you knew that they were going to play with some desperation. Victor Oladipo had his biggest game, 9 of 19 from the floor for 25 points. You got a big showing from Miles Turner, who had been somewhat quiet, 22 points. TJ Warren, a pretty steady 21 points. Brogdon was the difference. I don't think he necessarily choked up. He just didn't seem very comfortable. His shot wasn't falling. Finished 2 of 5 from 3-point range, but 5 of 16 overall from the floor for just 13 points. And he just seemed like he was stymied defensively by every ball handler, like every guard or wing player. Like, Nunn stopped him at one point. Dragic stopped him. Tyler Hero stopped him. It just didn't seem like he was able to get to the rim and wasn't able to get to the foul line. It wasn't as huge a disparity with Jimmy out of the game. Miami shot 14 free throws. Indiana only shot 11 free throws. So it's not like Pacers fans could hang their hat on the free throw disparity. It was an ugly game in the sense that it was just slow, sluggish. Neither offense really seemed to click. Miami's 3-point shooting abandoned them completely. Only 26.7% from the floor, 8 of 30 overall. 1 of 6 shooting from Goran, which was surprising considering how hot he's been over the season. Duncan, again, 1 of 7. Similar to what happened in game 1, where he just wasn't able to get good looks. And you have to give credit to Indiana, Nate McMillan, specifically for starting Justin Holiday. Holiday had been pretty active. He played 38 minutes, and he was just very effective at staying with Duncan, not letting him get to his comfortable spots there, fighting over screens. Duncan had a couple open looks. He just wasn't able to knock them down. One shot missed really badly, just clunked off the rim there. And it was very weird to see that, you know, kind of impact or negative impact from Duncan, but he was still able to get to the rim on occasion, finished 2 of 9 overall, 1 3-pointer, 1 made shot at the basket. So trying to have an impact, also had 5 rebounds and assist. But without Jimmy, that was the story of the game. How would Miami respond? And I have to give Jimmy credit. He did make that kind of positive impact defensively in particular in the second half when he was able to play a couple minutes there. But, this team has been so surprising. They got a huge performance also from Bam Adebayo. Nearly a triple-double with 19 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 14 points. Really great showing from him. And just doing all the little things. And this team was just able to continue to do what they've done all series, which is whenever Indiana had a run in them, they were able to block it off with their incredible defense, just get enough baskets, enough points on the board to distance themselves, push away a little bit, create a cushion, and that's exactly what happened. It was a 12-point win. Never really felt that close. And to be honest with you, Miami just was able to continuously beat down Indiana. And by the fourth quarter there, it seemed pretty likely that the Pacers would not be able to mount a comeback. And I, my feeling is that in the last few minutes of the fourth quarter, they probably gave up. The environment, the bubble, all the stress that came with that scenario finally got to them, and they kind of gave up towards the end there, at least in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong there. I'm sure Pacers fans or Pacers players themselves would never admit to that, but that was just my takeaway from that. Either way, big win. Miami advances again to potentially face the Milwaukee Bucks. I'll break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in the next segment before waxing poetic about Goran Dragic. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the kind of support that we're all looking for, whether you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair like many people do. Everybody needs support to make it through the day. And luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo of products that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with anti-inflammatory compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else that CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com. Use the promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. The good, the bad, the ugly. The takeaway, at least the feeling, is that Tyler Hero just seems to be continuously impressive. I can't say enough about this rookie. I feel like a lot of people have made a comparison between the rookies Tyler and Kendrick, and that's a little unfair because their games are different. Hero has stepped up in many ways that Kendrick has not. And I think Hero's defense is solid. I think Kendrick can be a better defender when he's engaged and locked in. That has not been very consistently witnessed. So there's also the playmaking factor, which I think definitely skews in Tyler's favor. And that's why he gets the majority of minutes. There's also been some rumors or speculation, reporting, I should say. TNT reporters, I believe Jared Greenberg, mentioned that Kendrick is still recovering from the COVID diagnosis where he had symptoms of a minor cold that has taken his conditioning away and he hasn't been as effective as possible. While that might be the party line, that might be the reported story, I don't think that's the case. I think Kendrick just hasn't been effective from before the bubble. I don't think he was necessarily going to get that kind of playing time now anyway. So after the diagnosis, he's had some trouble fitting in and finding his place. And during the seeding games, we clearly saw that he would struggle during the scrimmages as well. He just was not quite the player that we expected him to be. And so he just hasn't really found his footing there. But it was great to see him get a good performance here. But Tyler, however, he's just been so consistently good. And I think it's worth pointing out. I mean, Hero has been willing to do what's necessary when the chips are down, when it's a clutch situation, when the Heat need a bucket. You can always go to a guy like Tyler Hero. 16 points off the bench, 7 of 13 from the floor, 1 of 3 from three-point range, finished with 5 rebounds, 4 assists, a block. That's a great stat line for a rookie, a 20-year-old rookie. For him to be able to come into the game, play as effectively as he does, and to be able to knock down those shots. I keep reiterating this, and I think I've mentioned this on a few shows during this series. His performances have been really extraordinary. And that's not a knock on Kendrick. You can't appreciate one without having to knock the other. So I hope that's not how I'm coming across. Tyler's game really does transcend what most rookies are capable of doing, and I think it's impressive. I think we're starting to see the birth of a potential all-star here. And I know there's a lot of talk as you see guys like Donovan Mitchell step up, as you see guys like Dame Lillard or even Victor Oladipo and all the buzz about him. You start to suggest maybe Hero is part of a trade package. I'm not so sure that's the case. I'm not sure what you'd have to give up to acquire said superstar. Now, knowing Pat Riley, knowing his way of building teams, he'll trade away any player, whether they show promise or not, in order to acquire a proven superstar. It's not to say that Hero won't get there eventually. I mean, you trade away Caron Butler after his second season with the Miami Heat, and he goes on to have an all-star career and win a championship, unfortunately, with the Dallas Mavericks. But, you make that move. You do the same thing. You trade away Lamar Odom. You trade away whatever player you can in order to get a superstar. So if moving Tyler Hero to Utah helps you acquire Donovan Mitchell, you make that move 10 times out of 10, especially if you're Pat Riley. I digress. Hero has been fantastic. Just such a huge boost off the bench, and to be able to provide some playmaking and passing ability, to be able to create his own shot and be able to knock it down as efficiently as he has. I think we're going to start to see much more playing time from him in the next series against Milwaukee, and he's going to be a huge factor in that series, because while Milwaukee's bench might not be as great a strength as Miami's, they're deep enough and they have some players there that can lock you down defensively. And so that's going to be an issue for the Heat, is whether or not they get that kind of production and scoring that they did against the Indiana Pacers. So the bad from this series, and unfortunately there has to be something bad, is the Jimmy Butler injury. For him to be able to say that he'll get better, it's all fine and good. There's a culture in sports where, you have to bounce back. We all think of Willis Reed and the 1969 New York Knicks, when they won their first championship, when he severely hurt himself and he went back onto the floor of the Madison Square Garden. The crowd erupted. He went and knocked down his first couple buckets, and they sealed the championship there. The idea of playing through injury, being a tough person, is ingrained into sports and watching the game and things of that sort. And it's unfortunate, because I really did not want Jimmy to come back. I understand why he did. I know the rationale was, well, we've got to be able to put down the Pacers before they mount a comeback so that we can get a few days of rest. But that's one side of it. The other side of it is that you could potentially aggravate an injury and make it even worse, and then that needs even more time for you to heal to get back to 100%. We need Jimmy more at 100% against Milwaukee than we need him at 50% or 40% against the Indiana Pacers for the second half. That's my feeling. And so I was a little concerned seeing him out on the floor. For him to take it lightly, for him to joke through it, for Spoelstra to kind of downplay and talk about his culture and the fact that he has proven toughness in situations and his ability to play through injury, those things are all respected in sports culture. It's also a little unfortunate, because I want Jimmy out there on the floor. He's necessary in order for Miami to be able to challenge the Milwaukee Bucks. And so you hope that he did not aggravate his injury any further, and that he'll be healthy in a few days. So we'll start to see more and more progress. I'll stay on top of that and be able to notify you as much as I can about the potential injury and any kind of long-term effects, or whether or not he'll be available against the Milwaukee Bucks and what percentage he'll be. And I'm sure we'll get updates fairly regularly in the media, so I'll be sure to pass those along as soon as I have them. But it is a little unfortunate, and there are some concerns, at least on my end, whether or not Jimmy is going to be at 100% or close to it against the Milwaukee Bucks. The ugly of the series, and I do have to point this out, is that the Heat beat the Pacers. And they beat the Pacers without their best player in Domas Sabonis. They beat it without their best bench player in Jeremy Lamb. They often play down to their competition. Now, I will say, Bam Adebayo pointed something out that I've been saying regularly, which is that there's another gear for this team to reach. He was going to enjoy this series win for today, for the rest of the day, and then tomorrow morning he'd be back at it, working hard and getting ready for the matchup against the Bucks by watching film, practicing, doing everything that you possibly can. He has been phenomenal. He is so supremely dedicated and showing such incredible effort on the floor that it's worth pointing out. But as far as the matchup against the Pacers, I do think that there was another level for them to reach, and they did not show it pretty consistently against a team that was, if not bad, they certainly weren't good. And that's a concern for me, is that they played down to their competition. And the reason why they were able to win, with a four-game sweep, was because of this incredible talent disparity. Miami is much more talented and healthy than the Indiana Pacers were without Sabonis, without Lamb. And their bench was woeful. I mean, they hardly got any kind of production off their bench. Three total points from McDermott. They didn't get anything out of Jakar Sampson. They didn't get anything out of Sumner or the other Holiday brother. Nobody else played. There isn't much of a rotation there outside of their starting unit. And so this is not going to be the same kind of team. You're going to face a much tougher Indiana Pacers team, and if that's the case, you want to be able to play at 100%. You want to play the best that you can. You can't afford to take plays off. You can't afford to let them have a big run here and there, which did happen against the Pacers. They had several, I think they had an 8-0 run at one point to take the lead against the Heat, and so Milwaukee, much more dangerous, can't afford to take that chance. So I just that's a concern moving forward. I still think ultimately Miami is a very, very good team, and they can certainly lock in and tighten up a little bit to get to that next level. I just didn't see it the way I would have liked against an inferior opponent in Indiana. So hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully we don't see it manifest against the Milwaukee Bucks, but it's worth talking about. I'll wrap up the recap of Miami series clinching win by talking about unsung hero Goran Dragic and addressing the potential acquisition of Joel Embiid from the Philadelphia 76ers. You're listening to Locked On Heat. I've told you about it before, and I'll tell you again, rockauto.com is the place for you if you're looking for parts for your car or truck. So easy to use. Their website's been around for 20 years. Amazing to think of that they've been so consistent, a family-owned business that provides parts so easily for use. It's a quick, easy interface. You'll find the parts that you're looking for by your make and model. You'll be able to find parts. You look through them. You find the right price for you. It's the same low price for everybody. You order it. You have it shipped within a couple of days, and you'll be able to make the changes quickly to your car. I've told you about it, that I've used it for my wife's car, saved hundreds of dollars. It was so convenient, and that's why I highly recommend it for you. Again, a family business that have been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You go to rockauto.com. It's remarkably easy to navigate. You see all the parts available for your vehicle, choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. And if you go to rockauto.com and see all the parts available for your car or truck, you write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us section so they know that we sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car or truck will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This segment, I got to be honest with you, didn't really think it through all that much. Just wanted to talk about Goran Dragic because I feel like he's been so phenomenal for Miami this series. His offense has been incredible. It's worth digging into the numbers a little bit because he started off somewhat shaky in games one and two in the first half, but he's been a little bit better since then. At his age, accepting the bench role throughout the regular season, to be thrust into the starting rotation during the playoffs, and to be able to step up the way he has. And I have to say, I tweeted this out during the game. His defense has actually been surprisingly good. He's moved his feet well. He stayed in front of Brogdon on occasion. I think he limited Oladipo and others. Got caught in a switch against Miles Turner on one occasion. While Turner is not exactly a physical bruiser type big man, he is also 7 feet tall and a polished scorer. So for Dragic to be able to contain him or at least harass him a little bit was an impressive showing from him. But I like that everybody is noticing now how good Goran Dragic is. A longtime listener of the show, Claudia, my favorite yoga lady, asked why people hate Goran Dragic. How could anybody hate Goran Dragic, I think was the exact question that she asked. And the perspective from other fan bases, and I've talked about this before, you know, you follow a team, you follow the players, you watch them more closely than the 29 other fan bases. And so it's hard to see the outside perspective. But from outsiders, Goran Dragic is not very popular. He's viewed as somewhat of a cheap shot artist. He's a little dirty, perhaps, at least that's how they're viewed, and certainly overrated. Several fan bases, the 76ers, I think, particularly, and the Charlotte Hornets, were upset at his all-star selection a few years ago because I think Kemba Walker got snubbed and Ben Simmons got snubbed, and they viewed his addition to the all-star team as somewhat unfair. I don't care. I have long spoken highly of Goran Dragic as a person. He's always available from a media perspective. He's always open and talks very freely to us in the locker room. And I will always appreciate his attitude, his candor, and everything about it. But I think he's made some incredible sacrifices as a player and a professional athlete since he's joined the Miami Heat to be brought on a team in 2015 that was supposed to contend for a title, and to have his role change as dramatically as it has for the past 5 years. I've also spoken about the hope, at least from my perspective, that he will be on this team for the rest of his career, that his family loves it here, and that he'll be able to find peace here as his career, you know, winds down. Hopefully they'll be able to find a way to re-sign him. I know there were the reported rumors from a couple, or from last summer specifically. That seems like an eternity ago now that I think about it. But Goran did not get shipped off to the Dallas Mavericks. Their loss. And I'm glad he's here. I'm very glad he's here. His scoring has been so good. It's just similar to Hero in the sense that when you need a bucket, Goran is a guy that you can get to. And whether it's driving to the rim, creating space with that iron shoulder, being savvy, pulling up for the mid-range jumper, or knocking down the perimeter shot, something he wasn't able to do in game four but has been very consistently against the Pacers, he's been a huge factor. Another 20-point game from him, and so many of those throughout his career in Miami. And so I think a lot of people are starting to recognize this. I've made the argument before, and I'll make it again. I think he's the best point guard in Heat history. That's no knock on Tim Hardaway, a player that I grew up very much appreciating as far as my fandom is concerned when I started watching the Heat. But Goran, I think, is a better player. I really, really do. And I know it's a different era, and it's easy to romanticize that. And Timmy was a part of some special Heat runs against the New York Knicks and others. And you like his attitude. You love his crossover. You love his whole attitude and everything he was and the way he complimented Alonzo Mourning. They defined a franchise for a few years there. But I think Goran, his role in Miami, and everything that he's done since he's been here is so noteworthy. And I feel like it does not get the kind of recognition it deserves because the team hasn't been very good. And that's no knock on him. If you take Alonzo Mourning away from those teams in the 90s and put Tim Hardaway there without Jamal Mashburn, without Dan Majerle, without any of the other players that they had there, and ask him to carry that team, I don't think he's as beloved as he is. But the fact is that you had a Hall of Fame level player in Zoe. You had some other good role players in Hardaway. I'm sorry, in Mashburn and others. And so Hardaway's role somewhat magnified because they have playoff success or they make deep runs. They try very hard, but it's not like they won a title with Zoe and Hardaway anyway, much to my chagrin, much to Hardaway's chagrin, I'm sure. But Goran has been here through some tough times where they've made the lottery a couple times. They've not reached the playoffs. They haven't gone on a particularly deep playoff run except for a couple years ago, and that was basically built off Dwayne Wade's fantastic performance in 2016. And one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, as everybody likes to point out. But it's just been a very different team. To go through 41-41 the next year, to have to re-enter the lottery and draft Bam Adebayo the following season. There's so much of that. It's been a tough way to kind of assess the kind of player that Goran Dragic is because the team hasn't achieved a lot of success. And so a lot of that falls on him. You look at the past few years, and it's been a very bland, mediocre team to some degree, although I personally loved covering it and didn't have a problem with being a low-level seed in an Eastern Conference playoff run. I didn't think it was a bad version of the team to have. I never thought the idea of tanking is the way to go about building a team. I don't like it from a personal perspective. I think it just... You don't ever want to embrace losing as a team. I really do feel that way because it's, I think Mark Jones from ESPN made this point via Twitter, and it's something that I've talked about before on the show, is that it leaves a stink on your franchise that you cannot erase. And you look at Philadelphia, which is a perfect segue to my next question here, which is, the 76ers they were supposed to be really good. Now they do have some supremely talented players. They have two very good all-stars in Simmons and Embiid. They have Horford, who's not been particularly good. They've got Josh Richardson. They've got Tobias Harris. A good team. A team a lot of people suspected might be in the Eastern Conference Finals this year. Simmons gets hurt. Harris has a hard time adjusting. Horford has not been really good this year. Josh is Josh, unfortunately. And Embiid, there are questions about his dedication, about his work ethic, about his conditioning and all these things. As talented as he is, as impactful as he is, there's another level for him to reach, and he wasn't able to do so this year, and they got swept. They got erased by the Boston Celtics, and then in the last couple of days, we've seen some frustration from Embiid. Earlier on Monday, Brett Brown was fired as head coach. There's going to be changes to the front office. There's going to be a new coach going to be brought in, and maybe they'll make some roster moves to kind of clear up some of the mess that's been built there over the last couple of years. And so the process was supposed to get to this point, and you could argue that it's been a success, but it's also been imperfect, as many team building methods are. And so there's frustration there, and Brown getting fired, you know, is a result of that. And as far as Embiid is concerned, there are rumors that he might get traded, which brings me to this question that comes from Steve Kolakidis, who writes, with Miami looking good, and they are, and Philly struggling, do you think it's possible for Embiid to demand a trade? And what would it cost Miami to pair Embiid with Bam at power forward? How far can a lineup, he adds, with Embiid, Bam, Jimmy, Robinson, and Hero as starting point guard go? So I guess the assumption is that you wouldn't re-sign Goran Dragic for some reason, and that Tyler Hero would be the starting point guard. Well, that lineup would be probably the best in the East. I have concerns about the Embiid Adebayo fit. Embiid takes a lot of three-pointers, but he's not a floor spacer. He needs to be able to get to the rim, so that minimizes what Bam can do, although you'd have Bam positioned on the elbow as he's often been. He can make passes to others. You need more, I think, perimeter shooting. Jimmy is too inconsistent as a scorer at this point, and Robinson, you don't want to rely on him, so I'm not sure if that's the best lineup that you could possibly field. Probably is the only option that you have with Tyler Hero there. Again, that's still a very, very good lineup. My concerns are about their three-point shooting. We've seen in Philadelphia, if nothing else, as good as a lineup or as talented as it might be, if you don't have consistent three-point shooting in today's game, you're not going to go very far. And so that's my biggest issue with that particular lineup. I think they'd still be very good. I think they'd be enough to get to the NBA Finals and maybe win a championship. It depends on what other teams are looking like around the league. And, you know, obviously things can change very quickly. As far as what it would take to acquire Joel Embiid, I talked to a couple of Philly guys, and not very good possibility for Miami to enter that race. You never want to discount Pat Riley, Andy Ellisberg, and the Miami Heat front office. Having said that, there are other teams that could put together much more lucrative offers. And Locked On NBA with my former Heat co-host, Wes Goldberg, we talked about some potential trades for Embiid. There's nothing that's a clear-cut favorite. The Knicks would be rumored to be interested. The Phoenix Suns are reportedly interested. I think maybe you can make an argument for the Hawks, the Clippers, and other teams wanting to acquire a superstar like Embiid. The Brooklyn Nets could probably put together a pretty good package of some young players and another starting caliber center and Jared Allen to pair alongside Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So to get three all-stars there, that might put them into title contention. So certainly an interesting package. I just don't think Miami has enough. It would have to be Kelly Olynyk, probably a couple first-round picks, including this pick this year, and then one in the future, and then maybe Kendrick Nunn as well. It doesn't seem like nearly enough. You're not going to re-sign Myers Leonard and have him go out there, although he would help. Let me be honest with you. He would help Philadelphia because he would be the floor spacer that they don't necessarily have in Embiid or Horford. So I think he would be a good fit there, but I think Kelly Olynyk could fit that role as well. So Olynyk, Nunn, and a couple first-rounders, maybe that's enough. Olenek's also a potential free agent in 1 year, so that might not be a deal they'd be willing to make. Either way, when you look at that package, it's probably not enough to acquire Embiid. They want something similar to what the Lakers were able to ship out to New Orleans to acquire Anthony Davis. And while you could say that Davis is a better player than Embiid is, Embiid's still an all-star level center, a guy who is immensely impactful, and so you want him out on that floor. You want him. He's a cornerstone of your franchise. For a lot of teams, they would want a player as good as Embiid. You can't just add a guy like Embiid to Miami. I know you all people tend to assume that Pat Riley can, you know, use smoke and mirrors and get anything done. It doesn't quite work out that way. You'd have to give up a lot to get him. So I don't know that you'd be willing to move a Tyler Hero, let's say, and that would probably be a starter. I saw some other potential trades say that you'd include Bam Adebayo. That's not happening. You don't move Adebayo for anybody in this league. I don't think so. I really don't. Adebayo's so young, so unique, and so impactful that I don't see many players that you'd add him for. I mean, maybe Anthony Davis, just because he is so unique. Aside from that, I don't know that there are many players that you move out of bio. So, Steve, sorry to burst your bubble. I don't see an Embiid package working out just because he's so good. And Philadelphia, moreover, with their front office going through some changes and everything else, you assume that they probably wouldn't trade Embiid unless he has a huge issue with whoever they hire as the new coach. So that's the only way that he'd force a trade out of there, which could happen, but it just seems very unlikely. I think he's said on a number of occasions that he wants to continue to play in Philadelphia. And from Philadelphia's perspective, while you could get a lot of talent for Embiid in a trade, you kind of want to stick it out for another year and see whether or not it might work. If Simmons had been healthy, maybe the series against Boston would have gone a little differently. So anyway, coming up later this week, I'll still talk to some Milwaukee Bucks reporters about the potential series against Miami and Milwaukee. So stay tuned for that. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.